It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we find out why humane societies around Wisconsin are making a big push for cat adoptions in July. Right now, Wisconsin's turtles are nesting this time of year, which means more of them are out on roadways. That can create a hazard. In central Wisconsin, the state, the university, and a group of student turtle wranglers have a creative solution. Rob Mentzer reports on an innovative turtle crossing project.
Below the highway, here on the outskirts of Stevens Point, there's another highway. It's used by mink, raccoon, skunk, the occasional house cat, but it wasn't built for any of them. It was built for turtles.
This is also where I've seen soft-shell turtles. Oh, there's a bunch of painted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 painted turtles over there.
Leah Egan is a biology student at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. For a summer job a couple of years ago, she worked as a professional turtle wrangler. That is, she participated in a first-of-its-kind collaboration between the university and the state designed to give turtles an alternative way to cross Highway 66 near the Jordan Pond. It was the humans, she says, who got in the way.
The turtles are crossing the highway because they're trying to get to the river or to the pond or vice versa, and we built a road right in the middle of their path of travel.
The turtles out today aren't on the move. They're basking in the sun. But when they do move, especially during the June and July nesting season, they're at risk of being hit by cars.
Prior to there being a fence in place, there were as many as 66, almost 70 animals that were killed on that roadway, just turtles killed on that roadway.
That's UW Stevens Point biology professor Pete Zaney. The state considers any place with more than 50 turtle deaths in a year to be a hotspot. And besides being bad for turtles, they can be dangerous for drivers, too. In 2014, the Department of Transportation and the Department of Natural Resources together approached Zaney about how to help these turtles cross the roads safely. Their solution? A set of turtle-proof fences on either side of the highway and a tunnel underneath it.
So this is the Jordan Pond Dam. And then this is the hydroelectric.
A big part of the project, Zaney says, is something akin to turtle psychology. They had to think like turtles. For example, they had to make it clear to the turtles that this tunnel actually led somewhere. The team put grates on either side of the road above the tunnel so the sun would shine through, and they put bright, reflective metal flashing at either end.
That is an attempt to create a light-colored background so that from the turtle's eye view, when they're looking across, they see sky and not dark green vegetation.
Zaney has been fascinated by reptiles for his whole life. He recalls being out at his grandfather's farm one day when he was 4 or 5 years old.
I caught an adult female snapping turtle that was on her nesting journey. And my grandfather proceeded to make soup out of it.
Zaney doesn't remember eating the soup. His interest in the creatures, though, that stuck. So when the state approached, of course Zaney helped with the turtle crossing project. With a $25,000 grant, he hired students like Egan to work as turtle wranglers. The students monitored the site and the fencing, they reviewed images from the trail cameras set up at either end of the tunnel, and they counted up turtles that didn't make it.
My dad always gave me a hard time that I was just scraping dead turtles off the road, but it was a lot more than that.
And as it turns out, there are fewer turtles dying on this stretch of road. This spring, Zaney presented a final report to the state. The number of turtles killed at the spot went from nearly 70 per year before the tunnel to between 10 and 20 after. DOT biologist Alyssa Barrett says her department is pleased.
No baby turtles were killed on the road in the first year, and that's a huge success for us. And then from a transportation standpoint, that means there's fewer turtles on the road and less risk to the public.
Barrett says the department will look for opportunities to use the project's lessons elsewhere. All it took was a clever design, a little wrangling, and someone willing to think like a turtle. Rob Mentzer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's Central Time. Now two state lawmakers join us to talk about some of the issues facing Wisconsin's prison system. For the state's adult prisons, overcrowding is one concern. The number of inmates rose sharply in the 1990s, and the system is now about a third over its capacity. Governor Evers said in his campaign he'd like to see the prison population ultimately cut in about half. And the juvenile correction system has an overhaul in the works after former Governor Scott Walker signed a bill last year to close the Lincoln Hills Youth Prison and replace it with regional facilities by 2021. Governor Evers shares that goal but says the state needs more time to make the plan a reality. Let's meet our two guest lawmakers now. David Bowen is a Democrat representing the state's 10th Assembly District in Milwaukee and Shorewood. He serves on the Assembly Committee on Corrections. Representative Bowen, thanks a lot for being here.
Rob, thank you so much for having me on.
Also with us in the studio, Patrick Snyder, a Republican representing the 85th Assembly District, which includes Wausau. He's also a member of that Corrections Committee. Representative Snyder, thanks for coming up.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Rob.
Well, Representative Bowen, let's start with you. The prison population, we've seen it rise steadily over the last 30 years. We're hearing concerns about prisons being over capacity, a lack of staffing. What do you see as priorities when it comes to our prison situation right now?
Well, we know that, you know, this is a problem that's built up over time. We know that there are policies that are pushing us to have a system that currently is overcrowded and overpopulated. And we do need to align some things in the immediate, right? How do we put out some fires of things that are really pressing right now? That are straining our system really beyond what it was designed to do. And I think essentially we need to focus on stabilizing our system, right? We've been able to do that when it comes to the juvenile correction system and looking at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake and knowing that we had to take immediate action. I think you're going to have to see some immediate action on revocations and making sure that the folks that we can divert, right, from going back into the system, from just being placed in incarceration again, that we can keep those individuals outside and having access to alternatives and do a really full system scan and understanding, you know, we have a number of policies that have determined how long people can be in our system. Let's really dive in. And I think that you're going to see some collaborations on both sides of the aisle to really dive into the strains, because it's putting a strain on our staff. It's putting a strain on our resources. Right. And we know that even our prison population is getting older. Right. We're paying more for services for care and health and mental health and things of that nature. We really need to have a full assessment of just where we are and how do we really get our way out of it.
We'll dig into some of those issues, those particulars, a little more. But Representative Snyder, what do you see as top areas of concern right now?
Well, this is my first session on the Corrections Committee, and our chairman, Representative Schraw, and of course with Representative Bowen, Crowley, and a lot of the other folks I'm leaning on, some of their leadership. Representative Goyke has been extremely instrumental in leading some of the reforms we need to do. My thing is, I think everyone needs a second chance. I think there are people that, instead of just putting them in prison and say, do your time, and then expect them to come out in the environment that maybe put them in prison, without some type of rehabilitation, be it training, be it education, have a career that we can, you know, in their last year or two in the incarceration, be able to train them, and then they'll pop out of the system and hopefully be able to have that career that will keep them away from the environment that they were in, that maybe they don't go back.
One piece of that puzzle that I think both of you have worked on, you both signed on to some legislation aimed at giving some work credentials to people as they head toward getting out of prison. Representative Snyder, can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I think that if we can get the training, and if we can also, you know, there's situations where if you're coming out of the prison system and you are a model citizen, you worked hard at getting the training you need or completing education, I think if the warden of that system or other administrative types would acknowledge that, like a letter of recommendation that could go on to the future employer to see that this person made tremendous strides to change their lives, and hopefully that would, you know, because we need the workforce, and I think hopefully that would change some minds for future employers.
Mm-hmm. We definitely have a chance to expand greatly the work release program that we currently have, right? We have a number of individuals that could have the chance to go out and work into the workforce and contribute to those industries that we know are fueling our state. And we have a number of individuals that don't get access to work release. So I think that's a huge opportunity for us to be able to invest in and allow those citizens, as they are really getting ready to transition back to our communities, that we know that they need to be set up even previously, before, even earlier, so that they can have those work opportunities.
Speaking of when people get out of prison, you briefly mentioned revocations earlier, Representative Ball, and there's this concern that, okay, somebody gets out of prison, they're subject to certain rules, they break a rule, not necessarily a new crime, but they end up back in prison. What kind of changes are you hoping to see there, Representative Bowen?
Yeah, and it's something that we've been focused on in my office, and we know that there is some sentiment to keep moving in this direction. We know that we have to reform revocations, especially when it comes to individuals that don't even commit a new crime. We're talking about technical violations. We're talking about individuals that may have missed a AODA treatment requirement and they missed their session, right? They show up late because something happened and they couldn't get to that location on time. These aren't things to reincarcerate somebody for. Currently, that's the way our system is designed. And we want to set up folks to succeed, not just to wait for them to fail or for them to break a rule. So we think it's really important to really look at revocations, look at how we get access to treatment, especially in areas of the state where it's hard to get access to different substance abuse or mental health treatment as well. And then also make sure that we have flexibility in our system. It can't just be so rigid that individuals might break that one rule and, you know, that sends them right back. They lose their jobs. They lose access to their income. They lose the chance to be able to invest into their families and their legacy as well. So we don't want them to lose that progress. We need a system that much more flexible than what we have.
And are you hoping, Representative Snyder, to see those kind of changes in that revocation without a new crime leading someone back into prison?
Yeah, the technical things, an individual constituent that didn't realize that he had visitation rights for his first child, came out of jail, was on probation, and wanted to see his second child that was just born, called up to the wife who had a restraining order on him, and he violated it, and he got 45 days in jail, lost his job, everything to that nature on a technical that, granted, he had forgotten. I just think we need to do that, not only for the individual losing their job or maybe setting them back thinking, I'll never win, but also for the taxpayer, because now it's incarcerated. Now the costs go up for the counties, for the states, because we're putting people in that maybe on a technical side could be worked with in a different way.
We're talking to two state representatives right now, Republican Patrick Snyder, Democrat David Bowen, about their thoughts on changing Wisconsin's corrections system. Jim is with us in Watertown. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know if there has been any thought towards making the penitentiary system in Wisconsin kind of a merit-based system. Unfortunately, I give a little history. I did 14 years in the Virginia penitentiary system. And really, to be honest, if it wasn't for some people when I got out taking me in and letting me learn how to be a responsible citizen and the benefits of having a real job, I would still be going in and out of the system. My basic idea on this is when you get in, if the person shows that they're a fairly good person but just made some mistakes, allow them to earn the right to have a job.
All right. Jim, I'm going to jump in. We've got a lot of callers. Thank you for sharing your experience. Representative Snyder, you're talking a little bit about getting people back into the workforce. He's saying, hey, maybe better jobs, decent paying jobs, even while they're still in prison.
Right. You know, one of the programs we have in the Wausau area is through North Central Technical College. And it was implemented before where we had money for instructors to go into our county jail and teach welding. And so when the inmates are completed their sentence, all they have to do is come out and do some lab work. Well, so far, of the 15 people that have completed the course over the last few years, all 15 are still employed. So we had that in our budget, but it unfortunately got vetoed out. So hopefully we can somehow get that back, because I do think that's very, like a caller said, to have that career, to have something that people were, caring about them and goes a long way.
And Representative Bowen, Jim mentioned being lucky to find people to help him make the transition out of prison to daily life. Does Wisconsin as a state have enough programs like that to help people make that transition?
I think absolutely not, right? We see that there are needed supports that so many individuals when they're returning back to the community, especially when you talk about the basics, housing, and having a consistent environment and supportive environment to be able to turn to upon release. We know that right now the system is built in a way, and it's been that way for a long time, where you're reliant on, you know, external people, relationships that sometimes can fall out, and that will leave you without anywhere to go. And we know that we need to be able to stabilize housing. That's a huge issue for individuals that are coming back to the community. And we should do a lot more with those basic needs to be able to support people, so we really do set them up for success, not for failure.
Thanks again for that call, Jim. We'll go to Courtney now in Middleton. Courtney, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Courtney?
My comment was, I worked in a 30-day rehab program with veterans, and one of the things we really try to stress as staff is that for 30 days, this is your home, and we are your family, and we care about you like a family. We want to see you do well because we care. And, you know, I think having people in prison is you know, part of our criminal justice system, and that's fine, but continuously punishing them and making them feel like they're there because nobody wants them around, the result is not usually good. You know, having staff have a mentality of, hey, this is your home right now. We are your family. We care about you. You know, what can we do to make you better so when you're back in society, you can do better on your own?
Courtney, thanks for the call. Representative Bowen, let's start you off on that one. Treatment in prison and less punitive, more, I guess, home-like facilities, she's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to have spaces that are focused on trauma-informed care, right? And recognizing that folks are involved in the system, have been through these traumatic experiences throughout their life, and that's led them to where they are. It does not mean that they should just be blamed, right, for engaging in the activity and the behavior that has got them there. It means that other things have happened to them, and our system needs to recognize that too. So if you do have a trauma-informed space, it means that just being focused on punishment and continuously driving that message to a person that will be coming back to our community very likely, and that needs to be able to transition, that you can't just be focused on just those punitive measures. That includes having a supportive environment with folks that care about them.
And Representative Snyder, Courtney also brings up substance abuse. What do you see out there when it comes to providing substance abuse, that being maybe part of the story for many of the people in our prisons?
Yeah, a lot of times you see like a 21-day medical treatment program for opioids or heroin addiction. And I've been told by a lot of folks that it's more than 21 days. I think when it comes to our jails or our treatment centers, you know, we have to be there in a supportive role when they're released. I love local AA or NA that would maybe get information of somebody coming out with an addiction problem, meet them and take them to a meeting, get them immediately into a support group that will maybe keep them out of, you know, relapsing back into things. And I just think that what Courtney's doing and what others are doing in this area, and what Representative Bowen brought up too from our foster care task force, these young men and women, the trauma they go through, we're not making excuses for actions they've done, but you got to look at the environment or the stew they were boiled in to get to the point they are. And for kids aging out of foster care, a lot of times one out of two will be involved in law enforcement or the correction system. So we need to get in there and stop that as well.
Thanks a lot for the call, Courtney, and the work you do. I want to paint people a picture here. I've got a Republican and a Democrat here. We're talking about crime and punishment, and they're nodding along with each other at almost everything I'm hearing.
In 2019.
Snyder, yeah.
and everyone thought we were at each other's throats.
That's right.
Well, and it would not have always been this way on this issue. Representative Snyder, do you see things changing where this is maybe not going to be such a partisan issue?
Well, I think on certain things, when we talk about not only corrections and reform for prisons, when you think about children and families, when you think about some of the issues, I think there's a lot of bipartisan agreement. agreement to things. Maybe on how we get there or the money numbers or things to that nature, we might have differences, but that's how we compromise. I just know the way I legislate, I work very well, I think, for the most part, across the aisle with my colleagues, because Representative Doyle and I were the co-chairs for the Foster Care Task Force, and we had a lot of great committee members on that as well. And, you know, you really can get things done. We had 13 bills come out of our committee. 11 got passed and signed. So, yes, when you work together, you can get things done.
Representative Bowen, do you see this happening? I mean, we went through the budget process. There's a lot of arguments are related to that on these issues. Do you see work getting done?
Yeah, I mean, what I focused on is, you know, what brought us to this point. We've seen really significant stresses on our resources because we've allowed the prison system to balloon to where it is today. So we have a significant amount of dollars that we would be saving from our state budgets, for taxpayers, and more money going into, you know, building tax revenue with folks working in the workforce. But, you know, we now have so much dollars that we now spend more money on our Department of Corrections than we do on our education system. That is by design. That means that we need to switch some things so that we can convert to a position where, you know, our system is the most efficient and effective that it can be, not just, you know, just trying to make those points on punishment that has really gotten us into this mess.
All right, lightning round. You've each got about 10 seconds. One change you're hoping to make on this issue in 2019. Representative Bowen, go.
I want to make a really big move on crimeless revocations and making sure that we can align some things so that we can stop the flow of folks repeatedly going in and out of the system and set them up for success.
Same thing, Representative Snyder.
I'd like training, education to set them up for careers when they are out of prison.
We'll leave it there. Thank you both so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you, Rob.
Talking to Democrat David Bowen from Milwaukee, Republican Patrick Snyder from Wausau. They're both in the state assembly, both on a corrections committee there. They join us for a look at the future of Wisconsin's prison system. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Cats, in moderation, can be a great thing. Companions, pest controllers, lap warmers, and so on. But with too many of them, things can get out of hand and resources can be stretched. Shelters around the state end up with a lot of cats in the summertime, and many humane societies around Wisconsin are waiving adoption fees this month to help find homes for those cats. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you ever adopted a cat from a shelter? Are you considering adopting a cat? Have questions about the process? Have you worked in a shelter? What do you want to say to people to encourage them to pick a shelter cat this month? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Rachel Hahn is Shelter Operations Manager for the Wisconsin Humane Society's campus in Ozaukee. Rachel, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
Well, is summer a big time for stray cats being picked up and ending up in shelters?
It sure is. So beyond stray cats, even our feral cat population really, really escalates in summertime. That's often our breeding time here in Wisconsin. So it runs from about March through September. But you know Wisconsin weather. It's all based on that weather. And so if it's warmer earlier or warmer later in the season, that really can extend the breeding season for cats in Wisconsin.
And that does that put a strain on your capacity there at a Humane Society organization?
It sure does. So in late January, we actually had about 200 cats across our five campuses at the Wisconsin Humane Society. And today in shelter, we have about 900. So cat population is definitely seasonal here in Wisconsin.
Now talk about shelter cat adoption. How does this work in general throughout the year?
Yeah, so shelter cat adoption, at least through the Wisconsin Humane Society's five campuses, the way that it works is it's done on a first-come, first-served basis for us. So basically what happens is people can take a look at our website and see available cats. That website is updated every 30 minutes, which is really helpful for our adopters. And what people can do if they're interested in a cat, they can come on into the shelter. They can fill out one of our adopter profiles online. It's not an application. It's just a profile. that profile remains on file for 2 months and just covers some of the basic information about their home and kind of what they're looking for with a new adoption of a cat. When they come to our campus, they'll meet with an adoption counselor, and that counselor will actually share some of the individual needs of animals that are in our care currently to see if they can find a good fit for that adopter. And they'll work together through kind of an open conversation, open-ended questions to determine what might be the best fit for that adopter. After that, typically that's about an hour-long process or so, working with the adoption counselor, meeting the animals that they're interested in. And after that, we do same-day adoptions. So you can go home with an animal on the same day as long as everything is a great fit. We just do some paperwork and provide you with some supporting documents that'll help you really help that cat acclimate to its new home. And we also provide some post-adoption support via a video link that adopters can watch. It's just packed with information about how to best care for their animal, and then also our free behavior tips line, which is actually also available to the public, which is helpful as well. So really, it's a pretty simple process, a straightforward process, and a lot of benefits to adopting shelter cats as well.
But there is some process, and that sounds like maybe a good idea to make sure people aren't just doing this on a whim. There's a little bit of thought going into the decision and preparation, right, to bring home a cat.
There sure is, yes. So we always are talking to our adopters about, you know, how long have you been considering adopting an animal? Was this a kind of today thing? Have you been thinking about it for a little while? We're going to try to support our adopters wherever they are. So if it's just a person who's walking in and just kind of thought that day it might be a good idea to adopt a cat, we're going to talk to them about what are the supplies that you might be missing that you need for a cat? How can we help you get those supplies? Can you purchase that here in our store? We offer stores at all of our sites with essential items. Is there anything that we can do to help you get the resources that you need to be able to successfully adopt cats from us? Because if that person is expressing interest, we really want to make use of that and really want to make sure to support that client. So we really do work on an individual basis with each client through open conversations to help support them.
Talking to Rachel Hahn from the Wisconsin Humane Society, talking about efforts to promote shelter cat adoption during the month of July. And you can call in with your shelter cat experience. Maybe you've adopted one yourself. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go to a caller, Rachel, your shelters in your part of the state and many other, but not all, Humane Society shelters around the state are offering to waive the fees this month. Is that right?
That is correct. So there's actually 15 shelters that are participating in a promotion called I Can't Believe It. So great pun play on words there, right? But the I Can't Believe It promotion is waiving adoption fees for all adult cats, so cats over the age of one, for the month of July. And those 15 shelters, as you said, they're spread out among lots of places in Wisconsin, just in an effort to be able to help support adult cats that are currently in shelter that we see just an influx of, especially in the summertime.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, being a cat rescuer and foster parent myself, I highly encourage people who have elderly relatives, parents, relatives, aunts, uncles, to consider adopting a cat. They make great companions, and they help to ease the loneliness for the elderly. I think that's a great idea for people who, you know, have parents or somebody that lives alone.
Cindy, thanks a lot for calling up. Do you see that sometimes, Rachel, families coming in, one maybe an older parent, looking for that cat companion?
Absolutely, we do. And I can't emphasize enough how helpful it is to have those kind of adopters in the community, because often we can pair them with adult cats that are sometimes overlooked. The kittens really get a lot of attention. They're cute. They're, you know, playful and cuddly and little, but you don't know as much about kittens. You don't know what you're getting behaviorally or medically often because they're not grown yet. You don't know their personality, but adult cats you do. And so it's really helpful for folks who are looking for a particular type of personality to come in and find that adult cat that might be a match. And we have senior cats, too, that have been sitting, you know, sometimes for a little longer because people are less likely to adopt them. And there's nothing better than pairing a senior cat with a senior in the community. They make really wonderful lifelong companions in that way and are really growing with each other.
Thanks, Cindy, for that suggestion at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Ellie with us in Green Bay. Ellie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Ellie?
I am actually a current foster for the Wisconsin Humane Society. My family typically takes in cats, and we've adopted three of our companions, cats, from the Humane Society. I was just wondering if we could speak a little bit on how fostering helps all of these cats and kittens that come in during the season to get ready for being adopted.
Interesting. Ellie, thanks for the call. I didn't know about this, Rachel. You have volunteer foster parents, I guess, for cats?
We sure do. So we have foster parents that actually foster a variety of animals, from cats to dogs to even guinea pig. We have some guinea pig groups out there as well. So WHS is, we're always in need of foster parents, as Ellie said. Our foster parents provide safe and loving homes for animals who need to grow and be socialized a little bit more before they're adopted. And actually in 2018, about 3,500 animals were fostered by about 700 foster families. So it's a big network, but we can always use more foster parents. And as Ellie said, foster parents are just so helpful, especially for cat populations. This time of year, we see a lot of neonate or young kittens that are not weaned yet from mom, who are found abandoned by mom for a variety of reasons. And when those neonates come in, they need immediate care. They need to be on heating pads and bottle fed and monitored. And our foster parents, we couldn't do it without them. We can't keep those kittens in shelter. So they often go out to foster homes who can really provide that supportive care for those neonates. That round-the-clock care to be able to get them to a space where they're grown enough and socialized enough to be adopted. So foster parents, they just make up such an important part of our organization.
Ellie, thanks a lot for that call. We heard from David, who emails, we adopted two cats and have learned that you need a good vet that really gets cats. When we adopt a shelter cat, Rachel, could you help matchmake with a good veterinarian?
We absolutely can. And we actually get some of the vaccinations on board for your animal prior to adopting out, which is helpful. So a big benefit of a shelter animal, at least from WHS, is that they're spayed or neutered before coming to you. They've been microchipped. They've received some of those initial vaccinations. They also go home with a certificate for a free physical examination at a veterinarian that participates in that program with us. So we can help recommend a vet that's in your area that participates in that to get you in the door and help make that match. And they also, we partner with VCA, animal hospitals in the area, for the Healthy Start Certificate, which actually provides a wellness exam and then 14 days of follow-up care for a variety of different conditions post-adoption. So there's a lot of support that we provide on the front end to help adopters be able to successfully provide for their animals when they take them home.
Time for one more caller. Hannah is with us in Madison. Hannah, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, we have an adult female cat, and we were wondering about getting another cat, if it should be an adult cat or a kitten or...
Oh, interesting, Hannah. Do you, Rachel, look at compatibility with cats somebody might already have when you go through that adoption process?
We absolutely do. So a lot of what we recommend for any type of animal that you're bringing home is an introductory period. And with cats, it's really important. So a slow introduction. If you're bringing home another adult cat to meet your new adult cat in the home or a kitten, regardless of which you bring home, making sure that you take a good long week of them in separate rooms, just getting a chance to sniff each other, bringing items that smell like each other back and forth to acclimate them. And then when you do finally introduce them, really being at the ready to help support them and separate them again if needed and start the process over. So there is some patience that's needed in the process, but it's pretty rare that through those introductions, if you do them correctly and over time, it's pretty rare that you're not going to have success with them.
Hannah, thanks for the call. Happy searching for a new cat. Rachel, you mentioned spaying and neutering earlier. How important a piece of the puzzle is that for our surplus of cats in the summer?
It's incredibly important. Most of Wisconsin's cat population comes from outdoor cats that have not been spayed or neutered that are interacting with other outdoor cats that have been spayed or neutered. And we see an influx of feral cats during breeding season. These are cats that haven't been socialized, that are often far removed from the socialization process. And if you don't get to socializing them when they're kittens, it can be very difficult to bring them back from that feral state of not being socialized. And they don't make great adoption candidates then. So getting them spayed and neutered is really important. It also increases the lifespan of your animal, decreases some of the behaviors that we see with spraying and yowling, those sorts of behaviors. So spaying and neutering is key. We actually offer spay-neuter assistance program at several of our campuses, and we have our spay-neuter clinic in West Dallas to help our community with those procedures. So reduced fees on those at all of our campuses and at the spay-neuter clinic.
In just our last few moments, Rachel, you've done, I think, this no-fee cat adoption July before. Did it make a big difference? Did you see more people adopting cats?
It absolutely did. So in 2018, our combined organizations, so all 15 organizations, performed 1,555 cat adoptions in July alone. And that's compared to the previous year when we did this with less participating organizations when we did 1,300. So we're seeing an increase in cat adoptions consistently the more years that we do this.
Rachel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me.
That's Rachel Hahn, Shelter Operations Manager for the Ozaukee Campus of the Wisconsin Humane Society. We talked to her about a program aimed at increasing cat adoptions in the month of July. Her shelter and many humane societies around the state offering no-fee cat adoption. Not all of them. Check with your local humane society on that. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Representative Brian Stile thinks it's too hard for small businesses to find investors, and he says that could be a drag on the overall economy. He's aiming to fix that with a new bill, the Expanding Investment in Small Business Act of 2019. Representative Brian Stile is a Republican representing Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. That includes Janesville. Representative Stile, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, as we said, your bill, the Expanding Investment in Small Business Act of 2019, is on the House floor calendar for this evening. What would this bill do?
This bill really is an opportunity to expand investment in small companies, small businesses, so they can continue to grow jobs, grow wages, and invest right here in our home communities. As you step back and, you know, big picture, we have some stuff that we need to take care of, right? We got to attack the rising cost of health care. We got to go after $20 trillion in debt that we have. But there's also a time where we need to focus in on some of these small wins that we can get that are nonpartisan in nature and just work across the aisles to make some incremental progress. And I think this bill does exactly that.
Now, it gets a little technical here, but how are you hoping to boost investment in small businesses? You're going to allow them to go public in ways that they can't do currently.
So what it does, exactly, it gets a little technical, but what it does is it has the SEC, so the Securities and Exchange Commission, examine how these small businesses are affected by caps on mutual funds. So if you think about how people are saving, in particular for retirement, through pensions, through 401ks, the ability of those mutual funds that your retirement savings are in, they need to be able to invest in some of these small businesses, just not just the large businesses, so that they're able to get the benefit of the growth of these small creative companies, and these small creative companies are able to get the benefit of that investment so they have access to capital so they can invest right here in our home communities, grow jobs, grow wages, benefit for workers, and a benefit for retirees.
So if I'm a small business owner who's gone public, that means people can buy stocks in my business. People can buy those, investors can buy those, banks can buy those. But mutual funds, it sounds like, are restricted if my business isn't of a certain size?
Well, there's certain restrictions on some of these mutual funds on how much of their funds they can invest in small businesses. And so what we want to do is examine, can we lift those caps on those investment requirements so that these mutual funds can properly invest in some of these smaller businesses, which is a win both for the investors, so the people that are, you know, counting on these funds for their retirement, but also for these small businesses, so they have access to capital that they can then use to invest in our home communities, to invest in jobs, and to create and grow the American economy.
As you mentioned, you see this as maybe a small win. Do you have a sense of how big an impact this could have on small businesses around the country?
I think this is a meaningful piece of moving the ball forward. It's a small win, but what we need to do sometimes is focus in on the small wins out here in Washington. We see so much partisan gridlock, in particular on the transformative change, that we do need to actually get done here in Washington. But sometimes there's moments where we got to step back, go after the small wins, and work in a nonpartisan way. And I've done that with Vicente Gonzalez, Democrat lead on this bill, who I've worked with. Between the two of us, I think we'll get this bill across the line by the end of the day.
So by the end of the day in the House, do you have a timeline for when it could make it completely through the House and hopefully, if you're supporting this bill, through the Senate?
We'll be debating it this afternoon on the House floor, somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 o'clock Central. And then we're scheduled to be voting on this just before 8 o'clock Central Time tonight. So I'm optimistic that this will get across the line. It's been an idea that's been brewing out in Washington for some time, and I think it just took some the mantle and run this thing across the line. And so I did that, and I'm optimistic that we're going to be successful tonight. And again, it's a small win, but sometimes in times of divided government, when we're seeing the challenges, you know, we need to be happy with getting some of the small wins done.
Talking to Wisconsin Congressional Representative Brian Stile about a couple of the proposals he's working on in Congress. We've been talking about one aimed at small business. Now, Representative Stile, let's talk about veterans issues. You recently authored an amendment in support of suicide prevention and treatment programs in the Department of Veterans Affairs. What would that include?
So I've spent a lot of time kind of out of the gates working on veterans issues, in particular making sure that our veterans who've worn the United States military uniform receive all the benefits that they've rightfully earned. And I think in particular an issue that I spent a lot of time on is the mental health care of our veterans. The suicide rate for veterans is far too high. One is too many. I recently brought on a what we call a Wounded Warrior Fellow into my office who is going to be my full-time boots on the ground, my Director of Veterans and Military Affairs. And then, as you noted, I worked and successfully got an amendment passed on a spending bill that went through the House that adds funding for the mental health care and, in particular, for suicide prevention. I think that's an area that all of us, Democrats, Republicans, should be able to come together on, focus in on, and in particular, as we see the suicide rate for veterans as high as it is, we need to drive that all the way down because one is too many.
You mentioned that Wounded Warrior Fellow. This is a project that the House of Representatives does. Can you talk a little more about the program and your staffer who you brought on under that program?
So the Congress has a program called the Wounded Warrior Fellow where they provide funds for individuals to join congressional offices who've either been wounded or came through in a disabled manner. And so we put out a search a couple weeks ago. We found this young guy, Ryan Vishaway, great guy relocating into southeast Wisconsin. And he's going to be full-time on my team and really be that liaison between the veterans community and the benefits of those veterans earned while wearing the United States uniform. I think of him as being the scissors to cut the red tape. You know, if a veteran or someone you know has an issue, say, getting the medical care that they need at a veterans hospital, or they have a problem getting the GI benefits that they earned, Ryan and myself are going to be a resource to help cut that federal bureaucratic red tape that sometimes can get in the way.
You mentioned the need to work in nonpartisan ways on issues like small business, on veterans issues like the one you're talking about now. Do you have other things in mind, other projects where you can say, hey, I can partner up with a Democrat and get something done here while we're still arguing over some of that big stuff?
Yeah, well, I'll give you maybe another example. I have a bill that I've been working on that attacks the illicit financing as it relates to human trafficking. We just crossed 40 co-sponsors on that bill. I've been kind of working on that from the beginning, and that goes after some of this illicit financing, some of these international traffickers of humans. We need to make sure that countries, that we're holding them accountable to say, are you standing with us, the United States of America, in our fight against human trafficking? So that's a bill I spent a lot of time on working with my colleagues. We're up to 40 co-sponsors on that. And I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get a vote on that and build up the support like we are with the Small Business Act in the not-too-distant future.
Representative Stile, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was U.S. Congressional Representative Brian Stile, a Republican representing the state's first congressional district that includes Janesville and much of southern Wisconsin. He joined us to talk about his new bill, the Expanding Investment in Small Business Act of 2019, as we heard, likely to get a vote today in the U.S. House of Representatives. We also talked to him about efforts on behalf of veterans, including trying to get more funding to prevent suicide among U.S. military veterans. There are a couple of pieces of bird news out there this week about Vinny the Gull and Snowflake the Cockatoo. Story one, a bird was brought to an animal hospital in England. It was hard to identify because it looked like a kind of gull, except for its bright orange plumage. As reported on the Facebook page of the Tiggy Winkles Animal Hospital, the veterinarians were confused when the bright orange bird was reported by helpful citizens. The bird was having difficulty flying. The diagnosis, he had apparently gotten covered in curry seasoning or some other spice mix that contained turmeric. The turmeric gave him the bright orange color, and the coating made it hard to fly. How did he get covered in spices? Your guess is as good as mine. The treatment, a nice bath. The prognosis, the gull named Vinny, short for Curry Vindaloo, is expected to make a full recovery. Bird story, number two. A report published in the journal Current Biology shows that a cockatoo named Snowball can do 14 different dance moves. That's notable because it's about 14 more dance moves than I can do. Also, it shows that birds, at least this bird, can make complicated mental connections between sounds, like music, and physical motions, like busting some fresh dance moves. Snowball apparently had unique dances for songs, including Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and Another One Bites the Dust. Snowball's dance moves include headbanging, body rolls, and voguing. Just picture it while you listen. This is Central Time. Ain't no sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go.